Thanks very much.
Great to see you all.
I'm always surprised that poets don't question the existence, or at least the perceived existence, of gods in the Greek myths. So I've written this poem called Oracle. They call me the Oracle of Delphi. The best kneel at my feet, heed my rumors. Poets and sages believe me mystic, dream on images. Misled mortals misread. I, flesh of the future, told. Apollo, hero. Zeus, god. The lie of the mind, the mold of the mean.
I'm going to read a few poems from this chapbook,
the poetry reading at Central Stadium. And this poem, it's the first poem I had published, the poetry reading at Central Stadium. And it's been good to me, and was delighted because Michael Harton had chosen it for some anthology of commemorating the birth of Patrick Cavanagh. So anyway, I suppose if there's anyone here from Tipperary, that's for you. The first poetry reading I ever attended was at Central Stadium in the early days of my love affair with Tipperary. Everyone else thought it was a hurling match, but I knew it was a reading when I heard the poet rhapsodize the names of GAA clubs through the charged aura of a hurling stadium from his bunker beneath the new stand. Isolated on his podium by ticket sellers counting out their takings, the Ezra Pound of Thurles shocked me with the excitement of the spoken word. As he read out the names, Carrick Davins, Laura, Borlahan Douala, Kilroan McDonough, and Boris Ali, the fans cheered their players and their clubs, and I cheered the poet for giving me back my love of language. This has got a GA team as well, but not the same. The 1960s. Some things were foreign to the GAA then. Words, for instance, that couldn't describe a field of turnips or a potato pit. Finesse was one of these. My brother used it once, a dropping, swirling ball the club chairman couldn't field with confidence, but met with the boot. We had one of them at home, and the ass ate it. From GA to soccer. This speaks for itself, really. I suppose it says more about my mother than it does about the air crash in Munich. The Manchester United crash in 1958. And for those of you who don't, most of you don't remember it, but the plane crashed because the wings iced up and it couldn't properly take off and it came back down. The Manchester United crash at Munich, February the 6th, 1958. You were ironing clothes when I came in from school. The iron heavy with intent, driving to the tip of the board, each crease-seeking stroke smoothing and warming and shaping the sleeves and collar of my good shirt. There were some survivors. Poor Matt Busby's in hospital, you told me. We shared the silences between news flashes, my eyes avoiding the dinner I couldn't eat. Your iron melting the ice off the wings of the plane at Munich. Mm-hmm. Still a United fan. I've gone so well now. And there was one of our ministers for agriculture was awarded the Legion, the Medal of the Legion of Honour by the French ambassador. And I'm afraid he didn't deliver this kiss that the French are so good at with the same panache as the ambassador. So it's a short poem about that. I saw the Minister for Agriculture, French, kissing the French ambassador as he pinned the Medal of the Legion of Honour on him. His frothy tongue, firm as a farm, probed the surprised. This one speaks for itself. It's called On the Way from My Vasectomy. On the way from my vasectomy, I passed the signpost to Kilcock. Haunted by the omen, I mentioned it to Dr. Rin. My friends still ask me, does it hurt? Do you miss anything? Does it feel the same? Well, I sometimes tell them, I was on that road again lately, and the signpost is still there. Sometimes I go to the Cork Jazz Festival, and I was down here one year, and this saxophonist, Charles McPherson, was performing. So I happened to meet him on the street that day, and I'd been looking him up. I'm not a jazz buff, but I love jazz. Coltrane and all those, my things. But this guy had, you know, when he was very young, heard Charlie Parker and Coltrane and all those guys. So I wrote this poem, a short poem. Some days when you meet another, like the day I met Charles McPherson, I said, are you Charles McPherson? He said, yes, I am, or something like that, in Cork, in the rain. I said, I'm going to your concert, and gripped his hand tight with my two hands. Not having met Beethoven, I didn't want to let it go. So I have a few more here to bore you with. My wife is a gardener, but she has a dangerous addiction to snowdrops. So I wrote this one for her. She gives talks around the country on snowdrops. I'm just warning you. And she's not here tonight. She's holding something miles up. But, you know, the talks go on for about 2 hours. I know them off by heart now. She puts Castro, you know those dictators that really go on for hours. But anyway, that's nothing to do with Paul. Snowdrop for a Sunday. And then, after the last descent into alcohol, I'll go to your door, shuffle down the stepstones, your design, through the beds where in summer, iron lilies and glad I owe I disguise the dun earth, and for the bleak days leave on your doorstep snowdrops gathered that morning, moist with dew. And this next one is called Emo Court, because I was a guide in Emo Court one summer, and so I got to know the inside of the place a bit. But it really is not, it doesn't say much about Emo Court. It's more of a mood poem, I think. Emo Court. Cold coffee, chipped porcelain, beside the out-of-tune piano that played on. The Trum Lyle in the foyer. The lit candles we sketched in the shadows to subdue the plainless night. I view now from a separate table across the liminal space. A rusted key admits an alto from the ethers. The drift of a moment through this moment. Mysticals merge in the experience as they must, or be lost to the absence. And this is a kind of a recollection of childhood poem. And I grew up on a farm, and the thrashing mill, the first thrashing mill that I remember, I was to be very young, was owned and operated by this neighbour, Johnny Bannon. So this poem is called, I think I was thinking of Trotsky and that train when I was writing this. The night Bannon's thrashing mill arrived in our yard, Johnny Bannon won my respect the day he declined to wash his hands. Their grandman thanks. He spoke with the assurance of one who knows his options. My mother fussed and poured his tea. His overalls, decorated with medals of exotic Greece, sparkled in the reflection of the Aladdin lamp that lit our kitchen. Amorphous transfers to his face and neck from his oily fingers confirmed the mystical status of the lieutenant of the Leviathan. I imagined his railway man's cap, badged and braided, the armor-plated engine storming along the front, he leaning out of the side door, barking glad tidings of bushel weight to expectant farmers at agricultural speed. I held back on my father's knee, wanted to be second in command in his benevolent army, to be there when he swung the starting handle that fired the pistons, to carry the drums of TVO that smelled of the future, to befriend him, to give him a hand. I think listening to Paul Durkin years ago on Sunday Miscellany, reading his poetry, fired up this interest in poetry, this great hypnotic voice he has. And I was friendly with him and close-ish to him for a good while, and then we, for various reasons, separated. I didn't meet him again till last year, about 15 months ago. He was reading poetry in Preston House in Abbey Leaks. But the funny thing, on the way, it wasn't funny at all, on the way down his car went on fire. So he had to borrow another car, but he made it anyway. So this is called Meeting the Poet for Paul Burke. Not a chariot of fire that could amble on the elemental, rather in its stead a horse-powered car that lost its cool with the elements in Rathcool, spirited you eventually to Preston House, where we would meet, not in the mist on Mount Olympus, known to every poet, but upstairs in the ethers of Abilix. What year is it, you asked, as you signed my copy of your book? Had we, in that Zeus moment, eclipsed the worldly whims of space, ink, and time? Afterwards, I winged it downward till I made landfall among the pitfalls and the charms of the chatty. How, I know not. Recall is a practice experienced in the cosmos. Next day, my car was round the back, parked and safely home. Sometimes, when you meet someone and you leave and you're not sure how they feel, and when you look back and when they wave, it's a magical experience. So this is that. In spite of what is known, a wave could be light, could be love, rippled the underlay of the vacant street. An out-of-time bell pealed across the moonless night. The wonder of an incident that's beyond alpha, above evidence. The sacred secret of the divine revealed in the hand raised. I stumbled from the present towards the undulant layer. Tear, sorry. You would never know. This poem is called Revision, and I think Ruth Dudley Edwards, myself, and Kevin Myers are probably the only three people that have stood out against all of the odds in supporting, or at least in being sympathetic to Israel in their dreadful things they're doing. And of course they're unforgivable and inexcusable to the Palestinians. But I come from a bit older than most of you, so I suppose talk of the Holocaust and all that is still with you. So I'm speaking here today. I don't think they're going to listen to the people in Israel, imagining that Hitler did their thing. The worldview of Hitler could be revised. So that's what's going on in this poem. This is how it will begin. A snapshot in a Teutonic tabloid, Viennese maybe. A forgotten street league final. The goalie at full stretch snatches the ball off the boot of the inrushing striker. A few weeks later, in the Guardian weekend review, he's in summary casuals, having the crack with a few art-conscious pals. The tortured artist will be reappraised by a panel of vorticists on Radio 4. Still lives newly unearthed in the Jewish collector's hoard, it will be said, concentrate awareness on his avant-garde verve. You know he banned the boiling of live lobsters. When word of the act of kindness makes the cookery columns of better type magazines, Dublin for a dolphins, such will be their outrage, will threaten closures in the seafood sector. Evidence of escaping gas will debunk the myth of the camps. The truth is, his orders had them built, it will be claimed, to save you from angry investors. Then we'll get to see the wedding photos. Exclusives in Hello will hug the pop cult con with headlines like Adolf and Eva's Dreams for a Better World, and I Want Two Children and an Electric Grill demands the radiant bride. The world will warm to the couple. Will the abyss return your gaze? Who, O Lord, will save your people? And this one is called They Haven't Gone Away, as in DEI, as in Opus Dei. And I come from a Protestant background, Church of Ireland background, even though I don't practice any religion at the moment. And so it's still you know, there, scratched deep enough, you get a black Protestant. So this was they tried to, I think they succeeded in changing the name, or the name of Trinity College, or they tried, but there was a bit of resistance from the academics anyway. But anyway, this was written when I read that they were going to change the name of Trinity College. So this is kind of where I'm coming from. We were cloistered in a world of table tennis and church fates, the talk of gossipy women and agriculture, and buns they now call cupcakes. We spoke among ourselves our own lived-in language. We would have read the name in the Irish Times, or someone would have known someone who did divinity in Trinity. Now we watch, powerless, in this our colonial present. This poem is about us, as words that distinguish our quiet difference, the sap of our lives, comings and goings, are slyly rooted out of the mix. Mary Tudor's Marlborough, battered to the pancake flat Portlaoise, is hard to stomach. And so it goes. The power to change names can change minds. The needy neoterist will toil for the day's fix. Language, robbed of its leaven, will speak the indifferent ardour of the man who has never loved. The believer, sustained on the crumbs that warm body and soul, will dare mumble queen cake, the word that cannot be kidnapped. So I write some ekphrastic poems. As you know, poems about paintings. And this one is after a painting in the National Gallery in Dublin. And the painting is After Market Day, Finisterre, 1882. And it's by an Irish artist named Henry Jones Thaddeus, I think. So I suppose if I have to explain the poem, it doesn't work. But I will. it's a painting of, I think they're like Flemish women, or Norman women of the 1880s, maybe, in typical costume, the sturdy, well-built women who would deliver children without any bother. I'm imagining that it would come up from the sea, and you know, the species is going to be originated through them. So, though not born of the sea, the eerie sea prepared them. Its currents and westerlies, its spring tides and reflected moons, stirred in them the promise of reality and the notion of hunger. Washed up on the steady sand and acting on impulse and memory, they trade food on primal stalls and dream of sex. Their vision is of an inland, a gigantic illusion conceived on this infertile shore. This lush earth maid values the five firm leeks lying in wait in her wicker egg womb, and will not share them with the plaintive waif in the blue beret, who will paint the pain in bedsits in Stockholm and Copenhagen. So it is, not a cause, a possibility. The weathered oracle's gaze is fixed, communing with the chalked calm beyond the oceanic roar that is in her and in us all. She approves. Though she knows those hips will people the barren earth, that their stock will create mathematics and Morris dancing, nuclear power and mythology. She also knows that taking the chance to explore love and heart is part of the experiment that must be seen through. And this one is a nephew of mine was into film, and he did a film of his own bedroom, but the Venetian blind closed, and the shadows of the trees outside. So it's very good. So I wrote this poem about Barry's Blind, after a video by Barry Doyle. To wake to broken lines within a broad rectangle, the unimaged that spells the day to come, the mirage that promises shapes and symmetry, sums and stories, haunts those willow leaves that waltz through the astral winds, whimsical, withdrawn. Barry's drawn Venetian is blind to the shadowy sirens. They make light of its lexical design and the earth's gravitational pull. Their day-defying dance sways to music unplayed, an imprint marked out. This is, I love Edward Hopper's paintings, and what really like about him, they could say he's a realist, of course he's not, is the absences in his paintings. So this is one. After Edward Hopper's hotel room. Things unimaginable, sensed in your paintings, confront our dreamy notion of reality. Reduced to basics, the imagined is a pretty dull state of affairs, hardly worth the bother if we were to think about it. Clutter in the corner, the labelled suitcase, packed and ready to go, no longer suits. Defined borders, sharp shapes, leave nothing to be desired. We think she is reading, her face a silhouette, the eye sees what we cannot see. Bare walls, blank page, the clarity of the magnified absence. Can it matter? Body and soul akimbo, beyond caring, connect to the obvious. Two more, so relax. This is a bit philosophical. Being seen through Carol's quarries, which is a quarry up near where I live. Even if it's a panorama of ideas light and shade being undone, a denial in increments of belief that makes you covet the impossible stability of December days and moonless nights, illusions never so ghostly. Though the grasp of the senses will haul you towards the actual, a vision of grandeur in the black and grey of the carrion crow, the real, if only you knew it, invites, describable the way nothing is.
And finally, this is called after Cher Gillard's war poetry, a war party. So Cher Gillard is an Australian, New Zealand lady living in Australia, and she writes erotic poetry. So I rewrote a poem to her. So here we go. In a war declared by lovers, lust whispered is the cry that stirs the sleepy troops. I answered the call to arms in the fire of his kisses. Tongue holding out against tongue. Lips swollen and saturated. My body armor melting like shedding skin. His strokes probe and provoke. Dare me to reach and strain in the rise and fall of us. The choir of moans and gasps, the tortured yelps, hold us in the fury of a heat where retreat is not on. I pour over his battered warhead, bathe it as one does in the flow of battle. The danger from a loaded gun keeps my finger on the trigger till a time to come. When the lovers of war collapse in pools tossed across the trenches. Thank you very much.